The Apple Watch is a prick though, man. You'll be mind your own business. Have you seen this, Alex? Then the Apple Watch said, big man, stand up. Have you seen this? For no reason. The watch, big man, breathe. The watch tells you to breathe, bro. Fuck this watch, man.
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
Yeah, to kind of go through and do it that route felt the most organic for me, but also the most fulfilling, because I, you know, again, before any of the success was happening, it's a social media, I'm meeting people in the street who are just like, oh man, like you were treating me like I'm someone. Yeah. And I'm like, I just do videos in my bedroom at my mum's house. Do you know what I mean?
We do know what you mean. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
2:30 in the morning!
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is the Wicked Ways director, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chrissy.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Remember that song by, what's his name, Chris Isaac? Wicked Games.
Oh, what a wicked
to fall in love
with you. Oh my God.
Chris Isaac was like,
that sounded very close.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
No.
What a wicked game.
What a wicked game to play. What a wicked name to play. And he had those models in the, remember the video?
Yes,
he had those beautiful,
yes.
Like Claudia Schiffer.
Was there a beach scene?
It was beach. It was lots of boobs with sand, like in bikinis. And then he was like playing his guitar with his weird face. What a wicked thing to say. What a wicked thing to do. But I liked the song at the time. I was like, okay, all right, I can get down with that. Yeah, why not? All right. But whatever happened to Chris Isaac? He was like an actor for a while there, wasn't he?
Was he?
I feel like he did a couple comedy things even. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he has got that funny face that everybody wants to, you know, do whatever. Anyway, it's a TCB infomercial.
Yes,
and I'm very
is.
Excited to have Mo Gilligan here with us today. He is an import from London. He's very famous over there. Very popular comedian over in the UK.
Yeah, he's got TV shows. He, you know, I mean, The Masked Singer, The Masked Dancer.
The Masked Singer, The Masked Dancer, Late-ish. He's got, like, he's done 4, 5, 6 shows over there on the BBCs and, you know, all the channels that
what
they have.
What was the other
there.
One? The Big Nasty?
The Big Nasty.
Yeah, I want to check that one out.
Yeah, you got to check out The Big Nasty. Go to MoGilligan.com, I guess, is the bottom line to this one. He's on tour very briefly here in the United States, and then he's going elsewhere in the world.
Well, because he's doing a world tour.
He's doing a world tour, quote unquote, and I can't wait to get into it with him. And I watched his special last night. I got to tell you, it's pretty fucking funny. He's on Netflix too. He's got 2 different specials on Netflix. So MoGilligan.com, you can get all the information there. Of course, I'll put the information in the show notes also. But I wanted to talk briefly before we get to Mo. I want to talk briefly about something you and I were discussing before we got on the show, which is the prop bets. Remember we were having that big conversation about betting a couple of weeks ago? We were having a big conversation about these bets where you can bet on a single player. Like, I think it's gotten to the minutia of, let's take March Madness for an example. Number 33 is going to score a basket or get a rebound in the next travel down the court. And then you have a certain amount of time to quickly lock in your bet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a prop bet. You're betting on every little thing that happens in the game. And now the director of the NCAA, I think, has been calling for a ban on. He's actually been calling on it for a while. $2.7 billion. That's how much the American Gaming Association estimates will be bet this year on the NCAA's men's and women's basketball tournaments. $2.7 billion.
That's a lot of money.
What are you guys doing with your money? Send us a tenth of that, and we will do the commercial break live in your bedroom for the rest of your life. You want to take off a Friday? We'll take off Friday. We'll just sit in your bedroom quietly. We'll help you make your bed is what's going on.
Yeah,
what
we
I'm
like
to
make
say.
Beds.
Yeah, we love to make beds. So if you, not bets, beds.
Yeah,
we will be making beds while you're making bets. Okay, how's that? There you go.
Like a cleaning service slogan.
Yes.
We'll make your bed.
We'll make
you
your
make
bets.
The bets.
Yeah, we'll make your beds and you make the bets. And by bets, I mean you're just going to PayPal me every time you want to bet. And that's how that's going to work, because that's insane. $2.7 billion worth of betting going on the March Madness. It's incomprehensible, actually, so many millions of people must be betting on this tournament. And here's the other thing that is surprising to me. The NCAA survey of more than 3,500 participants found that 58%, almost 60% of 18 to 22-year-olds have placed a bet on at least one sport in the last year. About 67% of college students living on campus placed bets, said the NCAA.
It's so easy.
While 41% of college students have placed bets betting on the same school that they go to. It's so easy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against betting. I, you know, we have sponsors of the show that are betting platforms, and so I'm not against it. And I've played around with it. I'm not like a huge gambler. I'll admit that, right? I'm not a huge gambler because I don't need yet another addiction. I've already kicked a number of them, and I'm hanging on to a few. And I think the more mild ones, cream and cereal, and you know, British comedy television. That's why I'm glad we're having Moen here today.
You finally got it. I finally did it.
I promised I would bring that British comedy to the United States, and here it is. But this is just like, you know, again, I think that if you play in a professional sports league of any kind, any sport, or you are going somewhere like March Madness, or you're playing on a collegiate team, you should be able to bet through a specific portal that does not allow you to bet on the sport you play in at all. I mean, because Chrissy and I were talking about this. Isn't it a little too tempting if you're my best friend?
Yeah. Right. Well, I was saying if I'm playing
You're playing college volleyball.
That's right.
Because I love a good girls' college volleyball game. I honestly do. I don't know why. And it's not because of the short shorts. I that's a bonus, but it's not because of that. I don't know. I find that sport
very
fascinating.
Athletic. Yes. Indeed. But then you and I talk and you're like, hey, you know, we could make a lot of money here if you just don't hit that extra point.
Yeah.
You know?
If you just sat on the court while you were playing a round of volleyball, if you just sat on the court, then we could make big money. I'll bet the downside, right? That's it. How easy is that to do? And I'm not saying, I don't know that it's prolific, but it's got to be going on at some level.
Right.
Didn't you read a story about some guy that was like...
Yeah, I was very suspicious that a small group of people connected to one player made a lot of money.
Oh, and they were connected to him?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't be a dumbass. Don't be a dumbass. That's my other thing, too. It's just don't be a dumbass. Don't bet the entire house to the house because you know you're going to lose because the house always wins.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. So prop betting, I do think it's getting a little silly. You know, like, is this guy's shoe going to come untied in the next round? I mean, that's just a little dumb to me. But there are lots of people who really enjoy this, apparently. And so I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying if you're going to spend $2.7 billion on just one tournament, spend that with us. We are so much better return on your investment. This all we do is win. We're like Donald Trump. All we do is win. That's all we do.
Charlie Sheen.
Are you sick of winning? Yeah. Winning. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy? We should do a whole episode on Charlie Sheen.
Oh, he's around. Yeah.
I know. Now he's on another show. He's like one of the richest television actors of all time. Because what did he get? Like $100 million to do the last three seasons of Two and a Half Men or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was very popular.
Yeah, it was crazy. He got some huge payday and then had no shame. I guarantee you Charlie Sheen is betting on NCAA March Madness.
Sure.
He had no shame that he was sleeping with porn stars, which whatever, some porn stars need love too, but he was like living with three of them. He was sleeping with them, making movies and smoking crack.
Yeah.
And he made no bones about it.
Nope.
Yeah, I smoke crack. What's the big deal? And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess there's not a big deal, because if you said no, then that would be a big deal. But since you're not, that's a big deal. And then remember he did that interview and the guy was like, do you smoke crack? And he was like, yes, I do smoke crack.
Yeah,
what is it to you?
He was pretty open about it.
He was way open about it.
It was so crazy, too, because I remember that. And I was working at another place here in Atlanta, and everybody was just the buzz of like, what's he going to say today?
I know.
What's he going to say today? Back when Twitter was Twitter,
yes.
Not X.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He was on Twitter. All like giving updates.
Yeah, he was giving
hashtag
updates.
Winning.
Yeah, hashtag smoking coke. Hashtag, you know, little heroin never killed anybody.
We were just all glued to the whole situation. Like, how? how is this going to play out?
Oh, man, that was intense. He was the best show in town for a while. Yeah. That's what he should have been doing. He should just, we should just have a reality show. But I'm sure there's like all kind of legal repercussions to putting somebody on camera that's constantly smoking coke and doing all this other stuff. Now, I don't know what Charlie's up to now, but he clearly had a something going on then, because remember that one girl that he was dating was like giving stories for what Denise Richards, I think, was saying.
Well, that's his ex-wife.
Yeah, like I walked in one day and there was like the biggest rock I've ever seen, but it was crack. Yeah, I was like, wow,
it was wild.
When you have that kind of money, you bet on NCAA March Madness and then you smoke a lot of crack rock. Okay, so Mo Gilligan, our guest today, MoGilligan.com, TCB infomercial. We're super excited to have him. He is making his entree into the American market, the U.S. market, and we're super excited. I think this might be the first podcast he's stopping by, the first show he's stopping by. I don't know that for sure, but I think this is it.
That's exciting.
And if it's not, I'll claim that it is, because how are you going to find out anyway? But we are really happy to have Mo. I wish that you would go to MoGilligan.com. Check out his materials. If you can catch a show, catch a show. He said he's going to, or his agent said they're going to plan another round of U.S. shows. Yes. So let's talk to him about all that. I'll tell you what, Chrissy. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break?
Do you want to do this?
I want to do this. This is what I want to do.
Okay.
Christina always makes fun of me. She says, your transitions into the interviews are just really strange, actually, Ryan. She's like, you go into like announcer mode. You're like, let's do this. We'll up take next. A short break. And up next, be back with Mo Gilligan. But you know what? That's what we're going to do. Take a break. We'll be back with Mo Gilligan.
What? Oh, hi. It's Christina again. Here to remind you to go to tcbpodcast.com for all things audio, video, and TCBDO. Give us a follow on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And guess what? We have a new phone number. I know what you're thinking, but I promise this is the last TCB phone number you will ever have to remember. So call us and leave us a voicemail or text us at 212-433-3TCB. Once more for the people in the back, that's 212-433-3TCB. Oh, and check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. That's all for now. Let's listen to our sponsors and get back to the show.
Hey, Mo, how are you doing?
Yes, very well, man. Very well. How are you guys
doing? Good.
We really appreciate
you. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me.
It's Mo Mania. He's like the Beatlemania. He hits the shores, and now he's here in the United States. He's in Philadelphia, so it'll get better, Mo. It'll get better.
Philly's a great city.
All right. So we have this hot topic we've been talking about here on the show for the last couple of episodes, and I want to know your take on it. Do you, have you, will you ever participated in cold plunges? Like where people jump in ice baths to, you know, have you done this?
So it's so weird you say that, because this time last year, I really got onto this, like, I started doing a lot of running. Like I started doing a lot of, like, you know, the whole 5K, 10K kind of thing.
Runner, yeah.
And I was in New York, funnily enough. So I would plan the route. I'd be like, I'm going to run around Central Park, and perfect. And I was one of those people that when I started running, I had the Beats by Dre headphones. I got the thing on my side and stuff. And then I was like, oh, I'm really getting into this. So I started to do the ice baths. I'd never done it before.
What did you call it? Ice bath? And
baths.
We call it an ice bath. Ice bath. So I thought, let me just try the intro way. And I tried it. I remember I was in a hotel in New York, and I remember being like... I'll be like, hi, can I get 4 buckets of ice to my room, please?
You did it in a hotel room. You filled it up with water and had them bring ice.
So I filled loads of it up. And I remember even getting in, the first thing I've ever done it. And I was like, this isn't fun. There is no part of this. No. I didn't enjoy a single inch. And it's mad because I remember doing it the first time I was in it. And then it's like, when you're in it, it's cold. And, you know, it's like they say, you know, you have to wait, let your body acclimatize. And I was so cold that I didn't want to move in the water. Because anytime I moved, it got colder. I said, this is not a black experience. This is not for me, man.
It's not for us either. Absolutely not.
It's not for me, man.
I'm of Irish descendants. And I'm telling you right now, there is no thing on earth that I would less rather do than be in cold water.
Oh, no, no.
Cold water.
No, I think it just doesn't work. I just believe it's for athletes. I think it's like, you know, high intensity athletes that are at that level. Yes. It's for those kind of people, and they can, again, it's about mental. The, you know, they got to have their mind. Yeah. There. I'm just going for a run. There's no need for me to be in ice. Do you know what I mean? So,
we're glad you're on the same
page. It wasn't for me.
We were reading that scientists, or a lot of scientists and doctors, are now saying, hey, listen, when you go into the cold water like that, it puts you into this fight or flight response. Your body is literally on fire. Your neurons are going, stop, don't do that. And people, I know that people mind over matter and all that bullshit, but for me, I don't, like, I'm not looking to be in fight or flight mode every morning after.
Yeah. Literally, I'm not a Navy SEAL. There's no need for me to be in a bucket of ice in a hotel. Yeah, I'm with
you guys. Mo, you are a huge presence over in the UK. You sell out theaters. You have huge social media presence. And I think that it's rightfully so. Now you're coming over to the United States, and I actually, Chrissy and I have been watching a lot of your material. You're really funny, and so
thanks,
for
man.
for those in the audience who is probably a fair share of them who don't know Mo Gilligan. Yeah, you got your start doing social media videos. Is that right? Like social media comedy videos?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so this was just a little bit just before the introduction of TikTok and those kind of like, I feel like now the kind of short clips of like the TikToks and the Reels is like a thing now.
Yeah.
But this was a little bit just before when Instagram just introduced videos. It just went from pictures to videos, and their videos went from 15 minutes to a minute. Yeah. And I just started just having some fun with some ideas of that, of comedy and some characters that I would just do to myself, really. And it wasn't a ploy to, you know, I want to try and get more followers. I was just stuck with this material, and I couldn't do it on stage, so I could do it on a video. And I thought, let me see how it works. And one of them worked and went viral, and it went viral in the UK, but it went like kind of more viral on other pages. So you get like the other comedy pages. So once I seen that, I had two things. I was like, cool. If I messaged all those pages and said, can you at me in the post so people can at least follow me? And then the second thing is I just put out more of that stuff that people liked. Done one and done another and another and another. And then just grew my platform. And through that, it's interesting because once you do this stuff, people are like, oh, this person's really funny. But I'd done comedy before that. So I'd done comedy since I was 19.
Stand-up comedy? And, like, you've been on open mics and out on the stage? And
Yeah. So I'd been on a circuit for quite a while in the UK. You know, just working on the Friday nights and the Saturdays. That was always that thing that I was doing. I was doing it as part-time because I was still working in retail. I used to work at Levi's as well. So, I knew that I wanted to turn this into something because I always believe if you have a viral moment, it doesn't last very long. And you have to find your way to extend it or ideally monetize it. And a lot of creatives, we're not business people. We're creatives
God
first.
God damn, do I know that.
We know
that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm dyslexic. And the minute I was like, oh, I've got to do this tax thing, I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be stressful, like, man.
There's the three. There's the four. Listen, we know your pain, first of all. But just really quickly, is it at all possible that you might come over here and teach Chrissy and I a fucking thing about Instagram? Because it's a difficult algorithm. You know, they're all difficult algorithms in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
but when you break through, it means that you've truly connected with your audience. Do you feel like we've talked to so many comedians about this? Do you feel that obviously you must, that social media, these online platforms have really given you a chance to cultivate your audience outside the mainstream entertainment fair, right? The kind of the lane where you go to Hollywood, kick around, do audition, you know, get up on stage a million times. That must have
just
felt
to connect directly.
Yeah, that must have felt really good to have to go, oh, people are really connecting with this.
Yeah, because then people go straight to your source. It's almost like an exclusive way of just having just your fan base who just like your stuff. And if I say I'm going to do a tour, they're going to come to the tour. If I've got a book out, they might buy the book. But it's exclusively your audience. And it's interesting because then that audience will just grow and share it to other people. And I'll be honest, you know, in the UK, like the route that I took was a route that no one had really ever done in that way of doing social media and then, you know, doing a tour and then getting the likes of TV to be interested in and getting, you know, like Netflix and stuff like this. That was a very unconventional route, especially being a Black British comic as well. There wasn't anyone that looked like myself, even on TV. So, yeah, to kind of go through and do it that route felt the most organic for me, but also the most fulfilling, because I, you know, again, before any of the success was happening, it's the social media. I'm meeting people in the street who are just like, oh man, like who are treating me like I'm someone. Yeah. And I'm like, I just do videos in my bedroom at my mom's house. Do you know what
we
I mean?
We do know what you mean. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So being a Black British, first of all, you're right in my sweet spot. I only watch British comedy. That's the only thing that
you
I ever watch.
British
I feel like
comedy.
I was born, like I was born in the wrong country, quite frankly. But being a Black British comic, is there, and excuse my ignorance if there is, but is there someone that you can think of that was someone you looked up to, a Black British comic who was like, yeah, I'd really like to follow in those footsteps or follow that path and get that kind of notoriety?
Yeah, I think in terms of following, it was just more like, because we have our own Black comedy circuit in the UK, so there are people within that scene that are massively influential of how funny they are. You know, you've got, there's a comedian called Slim. There's another guy called Richard Blackwood, who's huge as well. You know, he had a TV show, for example, in like the kind of early 2000s and the 90s. And then before him, you had Lenny Henry. But there wasn't much to choose from. But also following their paths were completely different. You know, they was at different times where the success was different. So, you know, for someone like Lenny Henry, who'd been on the TV from the 80s, His success was through television. And then you had someone like Richard Blackwood, whose success was also through television. But I, at this point, I had no TV credits. I had not been on a show. I had nothing to show anybody. So ideally, social media was the route that I could take, because it was like, I was like, I haven't been on TV yet. I know that that's been their route and that worked at a different time. So it's always interesting whether there's a new generation now watching me who are like, oh, I love what Mo does. And I'm always interested to be like, I wonder if social media is going to be their thing, or there might be something new that comes about that becomes, you know, their thing, essentially. But yeah, we have a really thriving, you know, Black comedy circuit. But there wasn't many people breaking through from that scene to get onto television, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, the kids today, they're going to put on their little Apple VR headsets and zoom around on their scooters, and they're going to want you to do your specials in 3D or touch, feel, cold hat. You know, it's something's coming down the pike for the next generation. So one of the things that surprised me about you, Mo, is that you did break through
to
on
TV.
Television eventually. And you had, like, what, three or four shows in a short period of time?
I think I remember there was a time, I think it was probably last year, and I was on TV like four times in one day. It was like I'd done I was on breakfast TV, and then I was I'm a judge on The Masked Singer, but then I was also on BBC One on the show, which so we had two shows on at the same time, and then I was on this late night kind of chat show as a guest. And I was like, yeah, people are going to be sick and tired of me soon, because I'm
That's
on TV
amazing.
So much. But yeah, you know, TV was completely new to me. I'd never done any TV before. But I think that was kind of like my blessing in some ways, because I didn't have anything to follow. I didn't feel like there was a script.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of time I was doing TV, they knew what I was able to do with comedy and stand up. So there was like, be yourself, you know, be you. And the first show I ever got to do on television was I was co-host on a show called The Big Nasty Show. And it was the perfect show for me. You know, Big Nasty is a UK rapper. He's very himself, you know. And we were just like almost like a double act a little bit. You know, he was very free, very flowing. And it was me who was the one that would be the one, okay, guys, let's all calm down. Let me ask the question of why the guest is here, you know. And it just worked perfectly. You know, it was a show that not a lot of people had ever seen before. We had amazing guests on, you know, some of the people I got to meet, you know, a lot of people from this side of the pond, you know, we had Dennis Rodman on, for example.
How did you like Dennis Rodman?
Oh man, he was one of my favorite guests because his stories were absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Crazy man. Stories.
Do you know the show Jackass? Okay,
yes,
so
yeah,
Steve-O
yeah, yeah.
was on our show. And he was sharing with me that he was friendly with Dennis Rodman. And he's like, you think I'm crazy? Sit for 15 minutes with Dennis fucking Rodman. He had dinner with the leader of North Korea.
Play basketball.
Playing basketball.
It was a mad experience for me because I'd never done any TV before. So to do this late night show and then to speak to someone like Dennis Rodman, and he told us he spoke about you know the problems he had with you know knowing the leader of North Korea, but telling us about his basketball past and after parties and stuff. It was amazing, and it was my introduction. So after that, once I started doing TV, I was like, if I could do this show and you've got Dennis Rodman telling us his crazy stories, and again, the show would run for 3 hours when we recorded.
Wow.
And it only aired for 1 hour. No, for 1 hour, but we recorded 3 hours. So I didn't know realizing that you're not meant to record a show for 3 hours. But it was a fun time, man, in my career when I first started. And there's a ton of clips. If anyone wants to watch
it, on his website.
A ton of clips that you can see on YouTube called The Big Nasty Show. And then it went well because, you know, I got offered my own show off the back of it. A lot of people in TV could see I knew how to do TV, which was very different. So, I think it was something that catapulted me very quickly in terms of success in some ways. But I knew my core was always stand-up comedy. So, you know, the minute I got asked to do a Netflix special was like, I kind of knew like my life would change in a way, if that makes sense, because it was something that was going globally. It was like, this is a chance for people to see my comedy on a platform that is global and I can expand from it. I can maybe do a world tour one day. And here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. Did it feel like that first Netflix special changed your life fundamentally?
Yeah, it did in some ways because I knew at the time Netflix is the place for comedy. Yeah. You know, if you want to find a comedy special in this day and age, you know, the first place you're going to go, you're going to go to Netflix. So I knew there's a part of it that I was like, this is going to change my life in some ways. I'm able to tour off this for as long as possible. I can add another tour. I can, tour in other places in the world. And the feedback, I think what I realized was, and this was my Netflix special aired in 2019. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting time because it aired in, I think it was October the 31st, 2019.
Wow. Well, it aired at a great time.
Just before the pandemic. But at the same time, when it did come out, it felt like at that time, there wasn't that much on Netflix compared to what there is now. I feel like you've got, you know, Love is Blind, you've got Selling Sunset, you've got Squid Games, a lot more to choose from. Not that there wasn't at that time, but, and I think when it happened, I'll never forget, and it went live at 8 a.m. in the UK. I'm not too sure what time that was around the world, but different times. And I remember refreshing my Instagram and it just went nuts of people all around the world who was like, "Oh, dude, I've just watched special. I live in, you know, Indonesia. I'm from Connecticut in America." And it was phenomenal. It really blew my mind because, you know, I went from 3 years prior to that, I was still working in retail, trying to do a bit of stand-up. So seeing what you're able to do with social media and how it can get you this far, I was like, okay, cool. Now my life has definitely changed somehow.
You're on a different level now. When you get a Netflix special, I think it just indicates, we do so many Netflix comic promo interviews, right? And we love them. We've had legends in here and we just love it. And I think one of the things that we universally feel and hear is that Netflix for a new comic or someone who's been around and is just kind of, you know, hitting their viral moment, as you say, Netflix is the you have arrived moment, right? It's like now they offer your special. You are there. And you may be too young to remember this, but HBO was like that when there was only cable, right? HBO would air comedy every Friday or Saturday night, new specials from just legends. But there was no real place, unless you went on late night television, for a new comic to get that kind of exposure very quickly. And now Netflix has changed the game and they've really backed the comedy universe, so to speak. They're putting their money where their mouth is and they're giving a huge platform. I mean, what a moment that must have been for you. How?
Yeah, man.
Do you have like a party? Like, are there people come over and you guys watch the special together? Please tell me there's like drinks and maybe a little marijuana, yeah, and you guys are just hanging out and going, this is the best thing that ever happened to us.
I remember at the time, again, I was still in a place of, like, you know, we recorded it. We actually, weirdly enough, we recorded one special probably a year before that when I was on this tour. And, you know, we sent it to Netflix. And at the time, you know, you're kind of in limbo. You're like, it might happen. I was a bit like, probably won't, you know, still. And Netflix were like, oh, we love this special, but we'd want to re-record it and make it bigger, you know, do a bigger audience and do better cameras. And that's what we want to do.
Yeah, sure. Why not? That's incredible.
And I was in a place, I was like, rah, you really want to do that? Okay. It's going to happen. And I'll be honest, even when we recorded it and you get a date that it's going to release, you still don't believe it's going to happen until, you know, I remember like seeing it there for the first time and press play and they did a doo-doom. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is real now. And then after it happened, because at that time, this was 2019, so I had my first show, I was on tours, doing loads of TV. My life was really starting to change. It felt like it was going at 100 miles an hour at the time. And I didn't have anything planned, but I remember going, I went to visit my mum one day and my mum was like, oh, can you help me? I need to take some things out and like go to storage unit. So I was like, yeah, of course. So I went to my mum's house and opened the door and it was dark and it was a surprise. It was like, my mum and all my family were there and just wanted to say, they all said, you know, we know how hard you've been working. Just want to give you a little like, well done surprise for your Netflix special. So it was a real moment.
Can I borrow your mom just to pat me on the back every once in a while? Can I just give her can she get my phone number so she can go, you're doing a great job out there, Brian. Do you think that the television combined with the Netflix, you're doing this kind of around the same time, did that, like, do you notice that on the, you were already getting noticed for your social media video. So I'm sure once now you've got, you know, a late night show, you're on television in some cases three and four times in a day, and then you have a Netflix special. And I'm just curious about this because you kind of had this meteoric story, right? Which happens to a lot of people that go viral, and then people like you who are talented, who can back that up, then sustain that popularity and parlay that into something else. Do you get noticed everywhere you go? Is that bothersome? Is that a lifestyle change for you? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think, you know, no one's ever sure of what it's like when you become famous. You don't, if you've never come from that world or never been around it, you don't know how it's going to change your life in some ways. In the UK, if I go to a restaurant, which I started realizing that this is my name and I'm using it on everything. If I book a table and go out, it's my name. So essentially when I get there, they know it's me that's already going to come, for example. So I started realizing that, you know, I can't put my name on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, even on the post, you know, my name is on my post. It's my name. You know, and the postman starts delivering a package, for example, and the guy turns up and he's like, oh, Mo Gilligan. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen his pack.
Can I get your autograph?
That's the part of like fame that going out in the street, it comes with the territory of being on television.
But when it comes to you, when it's personal, when it's intimate, when it's like everyday life.
100%. When you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, I've been waiting for this parcel and I'm in my underpants. And a guy is like, hey, man. Oh, Mo. Can you sign for this? Also, can I take a picture of you in the parcel? And they're like, no.
Check out my Instagram. Lots of pictures there, and you feel free to steal any of them. Yeah, I
think that's the part of success that you know one ever, like, you don't ever get prepared for that kind of side of it. You know, when you go out and stuff and people recognize you, and it comes with the territory. You know, I can't sit here and say, oh, it's hard, I don't like it. There are parts of it where you are in a meal and someone comes up to you halfway and you've got food in your mouth and you're like, oh, you want to get a picture now? Really? This is not the right moment. But it doesn't happen that much. You just find ways to get used to it. It is part of your life. I think for me, I've always been more conscious of my friends and my family and how it affects them, because I'm the one in the spotlight, not them. So I don't want people feeling like, you know, if I'm out at dinner, someone's like, can I take a picture of you? And you've got my friends and family in the background. Yeah. Because I've asked for this and I'll take this on. But for my, you know, my family and friends, they haven't. So I try to kind of protect them a lot of kind of being in my world in some ways and letting them understand what it's like. So, yeah, that's the only time which I feel like I'm alert.
That's considerate. You know? That's nice of you.
Yeah, that's considerate. Very nice of you. And but I think I'd say the short story. So I've been married twice. And when I got married the first time, my twin brother, the night before the wedding, a couple days before the wedding, he started to kind of get a little sideways. He was like irritated, bothered, not really. He wasn't. I don't know. He was bothered, I think, by the fact that I was getting married and he wasn't getting married. And one of my best friends, the night before we got married, he said this to me and it's always stuck with me. And I really find that it pertains to a lot of situations. He said, when you have a big life change, you're not the only one who's affected by that big life change. And you need to understand that other people's lives change also. It's like throwing a rock into a pond, right? Those waves go outward. And so you need to be aware that when you make these life choices and they're big changes, other people get affected by them too. And they may not necessarily want to be affected by those. They may not like how they're affected by those, right?
That gave
me a level of understanding. It put me inside of my family members' heads. And it was like, oh yeah, maybe, you know, Brian's not going to be around as much because now he's got his own family. That kind of thing was bothersome to my twin brother. Years later, we talked about it and that was it. But it's super self-aware.
Then it ended in a divorce.
Yeah, then I ended in a divorce. Then everything turned out fine. Not me and my brother hanging out again. And then I got married a second time and he likes this one, so there you go. So you're on this huge world tour. I was looking at your dates. I mean, you're all over the place. For
that's so exciting.
That's so exciting. Yeah. How do you is this your first big tour since the pandemic? Like, is this your first big tour since everything?
Well, yeah, I done a tour not long after the pandemic, but that was only in the UK. So it was a good run of big dates we had in the UK. And that was actually meant to be my world tour. So my second Netflix special was meant to be the world tour. There's Motor Life, which
it's
was
great.
Called.
I watched it last night. It's really funny.
Thank you very much. So that was meant to be the big world tour. And it's interesting because if I'm honest, the material from that tour changed in the pandemic. So I would have done before then wouldn't have been that tour. So the pandemic actually gave me time to basically write a different tour. It changed my perspective of the show that I was going to write at that time. This is my first time really touring in other territories. You know, I've performed in the States before, done one show there before. I've done two shows in Australia. But this is my first time really being outside of my comfort zone. That is the UK, which has always been the place that I sell tickets and it does really well for me. So coming outside of this comfort zone is really fun. I'm really enjoying what I enjoy the most is the vulnerability on stage. Sometimes when I've been performing in the UK, I started to feel comfortable. I knew that I could, you know, do a show and have minimal prep and still put on a good performance. And I remember saying to my man, very close with my manager, you know, she was always with me before any of the success came. So she's known me quite well. And I said, Polly, I said, I need to do a world tour. I'm doing this TV and it's amazing and it's fun, but I need to go back to the thing that made me vulnerable because I'm turning up, I'm doing TV and I'm enjoying everything that's happening, but I'm missing being nervous. I'm missing being vulnerable. I'm missing like the thing that took me to the place of where I am now, and people are seeing me as a TV presenter, which is lovely. I appreciate that. It changed my life. It changed my family and my friends' life in some ways. But comedy is the thing that it's so pure for me as an art form. It's, you know, you go on stage, there is just me and a microphone. You know, TV, you get a chance to maybe say the thing again. You got auto cue. You got, you know, there's different ways you can change it, but comedy just feels very pure. It's,
you're flying,
you know,
without
whatever
a
happens
net.
On the
yeah,
day
without a net.
Yeah, it happens. And I really missed it. I realized, I remember doing a show and I performed and I just felt like I wasn't myself because I remember doing some stand up and, you know, I could see, and I'm not an edgy comic. I'm not edgy. I'm not provocative anyway. I don't feel like, you know, I'm offensive for no reason. But I remember just delving into anything that might, you know, political, that I don't, that's not really my bag. But at the same time, I could tell my audience, this audience that have followed me for such a while, and this was a work in progress show, and they were all a bit like, I don't know if you can say that because you do that TV thing now. You know, you're that TV personality. And I was like, guys, I'm not really saying anything. But I realized, I was like, nah, I gotta do this tour, man. But I'm really, really enjoying it so much. Like, it's, it's really, like, going to different territories, different setups, comedy clubs, meeting people that followed my journey that longer than I thought, which I've been so surprised that I met people who said, oh, I've watched your stuff since 2015. Wow. I'm like, 2015?
That's like, I was a decade ago.
So, I'm really enjoying it, man. Really, really enjoying it.
Do you enjoy the travel part of it, or is it just like it comes with the job? I don't know. Like, I've traveled for work before, not this work too, but I've traveled before.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad traveled a lot when we were kids for his work, and he would... when he was asked, do you enjoy the travel? He would say, it's work. You see the inside of a hotel room, you go to meetings, you go out to dinner with whoever, and you go back. The traveling is not for business. It's not as fun as you would like to imagine it would be. But I always enjoyed the travel a little bit, but I also understood what my dad was saying. Do you get into that travel part of it?
I think I enjoy it. It's weird because the traveling comes with two sides, because you're on the go. You are living out of a suitcase. And when I left, I always come back with more than I left with.
So
I buy so much stuff. I'm like, oh, let me buy this thing, or that looks cool. And realizing I'm like, I need another suitcase now. But you are living out of a suitcase. You are seeing hotel rooms. You probably get about 5 different hotel room key cards because you've lost one and forgot one. You are essentially living out of a suitcase. But what the upside to that is that you get to be in a different place in the next 2 or 3 days. You know, it is hard when you got to, you know, move around suitcases, but as a comedian, this is still a champagne problem, in my opinion. Yeah. I feel like comedians dream of doing this stuff. So to sit there and be like, oh, I've got to pack my case. Yeah. And
I'm tired. And I'm,
like no one has any sympathy for that comedian. Do you know, if my other comic friends heard this, they'll be like, I don't really care. If you want to swap places, I'll do it tomorrow.
Your comic friends are like, I'm driving to Manchester tomorrow night to do an open mic, and you're fucking complaining about taking a 747 first class to Australia.
That is it, man. And luckily enough, I'm in a place where, you know, I don't want to shy away and say I'm not doing all right for myself. You know, when you're traveling, you get to go to Australia, you sleep in business class and stretch your legs. It's not as bad as me.
There's nothing bad about business class, Mo. I've been lucky a few times.
That's it, man. You've got to take the rough with the smooth, man. So, yeah, no. But I do enjoy just traveling in general, just getting to see different places and different vibes you get to see. It's amazing. It's the best part of the job, in my opinion.
Speaking of travel, have you been to Jamaica? Are you playing Jamaica? Have you played Jamaica? I love that.
Yes.
I love that place. I am obsessed.
You know what's interesting about the world tour is the amount of people that say, oh, you need to come to, you got to come to the Caribbean. Yeah. My dad's from St. Lucia, right. My mum's part Jamaican. So there's loads of people that are like, you got to come here. There's I've got a lot of people that say, you got to come to Africa, come to Nigeria, come to Ghana. And we're really trying to make it happen. It's just so much harder than I ever thought it would be, because you need a promoter on the ground and then logistics and there are places I really, really want to play, and the demand for it is high.
Yeah, like, I can imagine.
So high, but it is definitely on the list. You know, I want to do a world tour that makes me feel like I'm going everywhere around the world. You know, speaking of Netflix, I was in Japan actually, weirdly, just for holiday in January.
That's at the top of my
Japanese
travel
people.
Yeah,
top
really
of my, oh, you need to go. It's one of the, for me, it's one of the best places I've ever been to in my life. Amazing.
What part were you
and
in?
I've been in this. So we went to Osaka and we was there, and I was in this bar, and again, like, they was like, oh, what do you do? And I was like, I do comedy. It's very hard telling people I'm a comedian, because it's like, oh, you do comedy. Yeah. Okay. It can open
be
so
funny.
Much questions.
Yeah.
You know?
Talk.
What
do you got?
Yeah.
And they was like, comedy is amazing. And again, I don't tell people what I do. I don't be like, here's my Instagram, it's my thing. But my girlfriend was like, oh, have you got Netflix? And they said, yeah, we have Netflix. And they seen. And it was like, oh my God, Netflix. And he started taking pictures with me.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, you're, oh my God, I'm going to watch it.
Instant so, cred, like instant yeah. street cred.
It's in, yeah. It's in, yeah, man, it's interesting around the world where you're, where you can go, but also where you can say, oh, this is the thing that I do. And this is the thing to show yeah. you yeah. that this is what I do, essentially. And it blew their mind. They were taking pictures of me, and we actually became friends, actually, weirdly enough. We followed each other nice. On Instagram and stuff. So,
I really want to tattoo the cover on my head. I'm on Netflix.
But yeah, I really want to make it a real world tour. I want to go to places that I don't mind doing a room in Tokyo, and there's only 50 people yeah. in, because it just allows me to take my comedy wherever I'm able to take it to. You know, I really want to. That's like my dream, is to try and take it to as many places as possible.
There's an old comic friend, and I mean, he's older. He's like in his 70s, and he worked for Letterman and a bunch of people. So he's like a comics comic, right? He's not like super well-known, but if you know, you know, right? And his name's Eddie Brill. And he used to say, yeah, it's fun to play the big places. That's what you get hyped for. That's all the excitement, big parties, lots of people, everyone, big energy. He's like, but the small rooms are where you find God. That's what he used to say. He said the yes, small places are 100%. Where you find God. Because yeah. he's like, you know, and we've talked about this with a number of different comics. When you're a creator and you're in that zone and you're in that moment, it's almost like something else takes over. And that's that's where God is, right? That's the creation of whatever gift you're imparting upon the crowd. And those small rooms, you're living and dying by whatever's coming out of your mouth. In the big rooms,
people
know you. You don't fill 5,000 seats if people aren't coming to see you, right? But in the smaller rooms, people might not be there to see you. They might, whatever it is. But I imagine that, like, I can understand what you're saying. That excitement drives the creativity, and it gives you the opportunity to fall in love again with what you can create, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I think the Rolling Stones did like a small, didn't they one time do a small tour of like 50 seat rooms?
Tiny little places, no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they came here to America and they did this tour probably in like 2007 or 8. They had a new album. And so they were going to do a small show, big show. So they were doing small rooms, big rooms. And it turned into a complete shit show. Because, I mean, you can't play, the Rolling Stones can't show up for a 50-seat room and not have 7,000 people outside of it. Yeah, I think they quickly learned that was a bad idea.
Oh, wow. It's amazing, because I've been able to do those bigger rooms. And it's more just your creative ego that wants to do that room to say, I've ticked off and I've done that thing. And it's amazing. I can't sit and pretend I don't want to do it again, but it's not what I strive for long term. I think when I'm able to craft a bit of material and it works in a room of 100, 200 people, and it's intimate and I can see people really laughing, that is how you make this thing possible.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it becomes more than just comedy. Yeah. You know, there's no comic out there. I don't know, but I can only speak for myself, but I don't feel like any comic says, what's your end goal? Mm-hmm. And it's not to be like, oh, well, to fill out a stadium. It's like, yeah, it's a flex, but it's not the end goal. Because when you do comedy, and the bigger the room, it's not like, this is for singers. This is for performances artists. This is for, you got backing dancers and fireworks. You know, that doesn't come for comedy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen. So let me tell you about this one time. that doesn't happen. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Yeah.
Mo Gilligan is currently on tour in the United States for a few more dates. MoGilligan.com. We're going to put all the links in the show notes and all of the pertinent stuff. I think you're going to have a lot of success here in the United States, and we wish you a lot of success
in
the United States.
Thank you.
And if you're ever in Atlanta, you're welcome to come over. My wife's Venezuelan. She'll cook you some fantastic food.
Oh, wicked. I'm here for it, man. Yes, yeah. Well, my girlfriend's Brazilian, so they'll get on.
Amazing. Okay, bring your girlfriend over and my wife, and the two of them will cook an incredible fucking meal. And I am here for Brazilian food, too.
Happy birthday, by the way. Man. We share a birthday. I was looking up at your stats.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
I was
way.
Like, February 19th.
Come on.
She's got big energy.
Yeah, I'm on.
Oh, big up my Pisces crew in the house. Right. Yes, man. Oh, wicked.
All right, Mo, we're going to have you back. Thank you so much for coming. Serious on if you ever come to Atlanta, we would love to have you. MoGilligan.com. All the pertinent information in the show notes. Please check Mo out and his two Netflix specials. I think the commercial break audience will be pleased.
Yes,
with
they will love
this,
it.
Pond hopping comic from London. And I told you I was going to find a way to fit British comedy
you
into
did.
This show. I told you,
you
I was going to yep. find a way. And I did. Yep. You're our first British comic. You broke the seal. You always remember your first, Mo. Mo, thanks so much. We'll talk to you
thank
soon.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, guys.
Well, thank the baby Jesus. Brian took a breath, and now I will use this opportunity to let you know that we've got a brand new phone number. That's right, it's 212-433-3TCB. And you can text us anytime you want. Or you can call and leave us a voicemail, and we might just use your message on the show. Once Brian gets through all the messages he missed last year, of course. Anyway, you can also find and DM us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And of course, all of our audio and video is easily found on tcbpodcast.com. Now I'm going to thank G one more time that we have sponsors. So thank G, and here they are.
Mo.
What a delight.
Mo.
What a delight.
Mo. Why'd you have to go? I love Mo Gilligan.
We could
Gilligan.
Talk for forever.
Yeah, that's why I intend to have him back because, like, when you find, not when you find, like, as if I discovered the guy, but, you know, agent
when you,
extraordinaire.
When, listener, when anybody finds it.
Hey, listen, let me make the decisions and you shut your pie hole, okay? I'm Bob, the agent, and I'm here. To tell you, Mo Gillen's the next great thing. He's here in the United States. And when you find the next great thing, you let everybody know about it. But when you find something good and then, you know, you know that a lot of people don't know about it, you're like, oh, that's exciting. Let's get Mo out there. So Mo was such a nice guy. I intend
we
to
vibed.
Have him back. We did. There was a vibe there.
Yeah.
I agree. There was a vibe there. Can I share something with you that might sound a little strange? I felt like I wanted to get a hug from Mo.
I know.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you? I don't know. There was this weird energy going on the screen where I was like, do you want a hug? I think I just like to hug British people, though, because I feel like they're, you know, I'm part of my spirit.
Yeah, you accomplished your mission.
Yes, I feel that a lot when I'm watching the British comedy. Yes, I did accomplish my mission of having a British comic on the show. So more to come, I hope. You know,
yeah.
Let's get on that. Who's doing that? I'll get more British comics left and right, buddy.
Yeah, talk to that guy.
Yeah, talk to Bob. Bob will get him. Uncle Bob. Good old Uncle Bob. Yeah, thanks to Mo Gilligan. MoGilligan.com has a few shows here in the United States. Then he'll be on tour in London and Australia and other places. And watch his two Netflix specials. I guarantee you're going to like it. And he's got a ton of social media stuff. He's done television shows over there. And they are now on YouTube, which isn't always the case. So they seems like they put all the episodes out of his talk show called Late-ish, and he had some heavy hitters on there, like Schwimmer. David Schwimmer was on there. Who else did I see? I just saw a bunch of very notable people stop by his show. So
he's
you know,
big, he's huge in the UK.
Let's see if we can get him to refer some of those people to the show. You think David Schwimmer would come on? I think David Schwimmer would come on. What's David up to?
Yeah,
you know, since Friends, what's he doing? I don't know. Yeah,
he's
why can't
working.
He stop by here?
Yeah,
come on, David, come on the show.
Talk
you
to
and
Bob.
That Kristen Wiig. Yeah, talk to me. It's a small fee for being on the commercial break. People always ask me. People always ask me.
Really?
How much do you pay the guests? And I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
That's not how it goes. So one person over the weekend was like, you got some great guests. How much do you pay them? And I'm like, I don't pay the guests to be on the show. That's not necessarily how it works. I'm sure there are some people who do pay guests. I've actually been paid to be a guest on a podcast, but that podcast went nowhere quickly because the guy was paying to have nobody's on, right? But I was like, that's not how it works. Our agency is in contact with their agents, and then that's how
well,
we get them on the
like
show.
Well, didn't Corey Haim or whoever, Feldman, try and...
Yeah, Corey Feldman got a little slippery,
yeah.
And he was like asking how much he would be paid to be on the show. And, you know, okay, listen, I'm not arguing with you because you asked, but I'm certainly not going to pay. Like, I'm not paying to have Corey Feldman on here. How about I get more people to listen to your incredible body of music and then we'll call it a wash. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, but then this person also asked, they asked the inverse question. Oh, so they pay you? And I'm like, no, they don't pay us to be on. If they paid us to be on the show, we wouldn't be complaining about money so much because we would be just fine.
We do work with a great company. And they help facilitate this.
They help facilitate all this. Mm-hmm. It's an agency. They help facilitate it. That's how we get the guests on the show. That's how everybody gets guests on shows, just by the way. So breaking down all the walls here at the commercial break. If you want to know more, you know what you can do. You can text us or call us, and maybe we'll answer your questions. 212-433-3TCB. I'll tell you what. What I would really love to do is, besides the Mo Gilligans of the world, I'd love to have our fans come on and talk to us
That's
live here.
That's really what we want.
We've already set up a couple, so they're coming. People have responded. And if you are just sitting on your butt waiting to respond, get on it. What are you waiting for? We'd love to talk to you. You have a question you want to ask us, a crazy story you want to tell. You have something interesting you have to say to us. We don't care. Just come on the show. So send us a brief description. 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-822. Text us. Let us know you want to be on the show. You know, tell us a little something about it. You can also give us comments, questions, concerns, or content ideas to that phone number via text message or voicemail. We'll take all comers. Don't worry about it. We'll even take your shitty comments. Actually, sometimes I like the shitty comments better. It reminds us that we have a lot of work to
keeps
do.
Keeps us humble.
Yeah, keeps us right on point. haven't you noticed the show's getting so much better? All those shitty comments really whipped us into shape.
Yeah.
Same mediocre train running down a jagged track. That's all I gotta say. Also, if you would do us a favor, visit our YouTube page, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. We have all of our guest interviews are up there, and then we put clips and, you know, some of the shows are up there full time. And we will get back to putting full video episodes up there. We just had to clean up that whole podcast mess that was going on there for a minute. But that's fixed now. One problem is fixed, and now we'll solve another problem. That's how we work here. We take 10 weeks. Yes, 10 weeks to fix a problem, and then we'll get to the next problem. So don't worry about it. It's coming soon. Add the commercial break on Instagram, TCB Podcast on TikTok. Hey, and do us a favor. Visit the website, tcbpodcast.com. That's where you go. You find out more about the show. There's information about Chrissy and I and our friendship. It's a great website. Go there. You can watch all the video. You can listen to all the audio. And you can get your free TCB sticker. We're probably on the next one by now. So TCB sticker. Go to the Contact Us page. I want my sticker. The drop-down menu. Send us your address. And we'll shoot you off a sticker. No questions asked. Okay, Chrissy, I guess that's all I can do for today.
I think so.
But I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
I'll say best to you.
Best to you.
Best to Mo Gilligan. Go to mogilligan.com. Until next time. We always say, we do say, and we must say.
Goodbye.